Now, you might say that women have more flexibility because they can either choose the neutral adjectives or the ones that we think are more likely to be said by women, like adorable, charming, divine. A man doesn't have that choice because he's pretty likely to be judged negatively if he uses words like divine. What Lakoff points out, though, is that the forms that are used by women are not inherently feminine, but because women are expected to use those words, when women do use them, they also lend an air of triviality to what the women are saying. So the choice is not really as much of a choice as you might think. If we use the words expected of women, we're seen as trivial. If we use the neutral words, then we're not as feminine. On the level of syntax, Lakoff pointed out that women more often use what linguists call tag questions. And that would be something like this. It's a nice day, isn't it? That little "isn't it" is the tag question. She notes that although using tags might just be a habit, it might not mean anything at all, it can give the impression that the woman is unsure of herself. That's what we saw in earlier lectures, where so many of the ways that women are expected to speak can be interpreted as lacking confidence. In the area of intonation, the most prominent aspect of women's language, which you heard in the earlier lecture of women telling people what to do, is the rising intonation, what some people call uptalk. The examples that Lakoff gives is a conversation where a man might come home and say, "What time is dinner?" And the woman might say, "Oh, around 6 o'clock." Lakoff points out that the answer, 6 o'clock, can sound like a request for approval. In other words, 6 o'clock if that's okay with you. I would point out that although these words could be interpreted as seeming uncertain. She isn't sure if it really is a nice day. She isn't sure whether she really will have dinner ready at 6 o'clock. Or insecurity, she wants reassurance that it's okay with you. My interpretation would actually be a bit different. I would say that the tag questions and the rising intonation serve the purpose of eliciting a response. So when my intonation goes up, if you're listening, more likely to say to me, yeah. I think it's one more strategy that is focused out in the sense of calling for involvement between the speaker and hearer. But that's really beside the point of what Lakoff was getting at in her book, Language in Woman's Place. Now, Lakoff certainly knew and explained that it was not the case that all women and men necessarily use these forms, but it is the case that they are expected to. And she was the first one to make that crucial point that women are in a double bind, that if they talk like women, they get less respect. If they talk like men, they aren't liked. In other words, if a woman is talking in a way that she simply means to imply authority, she's heard as talking like a man. So this is similar to what Sarah Trechter noted in her observations of the Lakota community, where she found that a woman who used language forms associated with men was, quote, considered by some to be gay, referred to as a tomboy by one speaker and as a dyke by another. All of this is quite parallel to what I found in my own research, as I discussed in an earlier lecture. When women at work talked in ways associated with authority, they were perceived as talking like men and therefore as being too aggressive. Informally, you know that word that starts with B, which many women perceive as floating somewhere over their shoulder and is always at risk of being stuck on them. As research on language and gender continued in the 80s and into the early 90s, it was quite common to hear research framed as falling into two camps. On the one hand, a cultural difference approach, and on the other, a power or dominance approach. People realized, though, that this dichotomy implies a false either-or choice, as if describing differences actually denied the phenomenon of there being real-world power differences between women and men, and as if acknowledging those power differences meant denying that there could be, quote, cultural differences in how boys and girls learn to use language growing up. In recent years, then, there has been a corrective to this false dichotomy where researchers are looking for other ways to approach the topic, and here are some of those ways. Marjorie Harness Goodwin an anthropologist at the University of California, Los Angeles, was one of the first to study children at play, and I made reference to her research earlier. Way back in the late 1970s, she spent time hanging around with the children in her predominantly African-American Philadelphia neighborhood. That study became first her 1978 PhD dissertation and eventually was included in a 1990 book entitled He Said, She Said. Goodwin found that girls typically made suggestions starting with let's, and typically the other girls went along with those suggestions. So, for example, she found girls saying, let's play some more jacks, or let's play 1, 2, 3 footsies first. When girls were looking for turtles, she heard a girl say, let's look around, see what we can find. Goodwin contrasted this with what she heard boys doing. Boys typically gave each other what she called ball directives. For example, give it to me, man. Or, man, back out. I don't need y'all in here. I keep telling you. But Goodwin eventually became concerned with the generalizations that were being made based on her work. For example, that girls always and only issued indirect directives.